Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea. Welcome to Travel Talk Radio with your hosts, Bob and Sandy Nesshoff. Sandy is not with us this evening. She's out gathering material for some future programs. Today, our guest will be Peter Madania from the Bronx's Little Italy. Manhattan does not have a lock on ethnic neighborhoods or food, but most people think of that borough when they think of Little Italy, but the Bronx gives it a run for its money on Arthur Avenue. The Bronx's Little Italy is less crowded, easier to park, has a plethora of Italian fine eateries, bakeries, and places for great ethnic food. Welcome, Peter. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Okay. Peter, let me ask this. We understand that you've been quite active in the community over the years, but before we get into that, let's talk about the neighborhood. Most people think of Little Italy, as I mentioned, being in Manhattan. How did this enclave in the Bronx come about?
So 100 years ago, when the Bronx Zoo was being built, the Botanical Garden was being built, Fordham University, they were looking for stonemasons, and the stonemasons were people who came from Italy, had a craft, and many of them worked in all of those places at the turn of the century. And, most came through Ellis Island, went through Harlem, and then realized there was this opportunity in this neighborhood for work, came to work there, and eventually came to live there. As people came to live there, the things they wanted, the businesses that would support their, eating habits, were built around them. And so at the turn of the century, and my grandfather included, people started to open business, work there and open businesses that fed the people that worked in those institutions. And so Arthur Avenue became a place where Italian immigrants would come, settle, work, and settle, and the businesses that supported them were built up around them.
Okay. How does Little Italy in the Bronx compare to the size and the offerings of the other Little Italy?
I could talk about what we have. And what we have, so there are three bakeries, there are four pastry shops, there are four salamerias, there are three butchers, we have a plethora of businesses that are both family-owned and multi-generational. My business is 100 years old. My grandfather started it. We're one of several that are 100 years old that are same family. The younger ones are 80 years old, 75 years old, same family. So to me, that's the sort of distinctive character of our neighborhood. The businesses that are there, not all of them, but many of them are same family, multi-generational, who have committed to this neighborhood, committed to the quality and authenticity of what they do that their parents or grandparents did, or great-grandparents did in some cases. We have a dozen restaurants. It's this sort of unusual milieu of people who have decided that this is what they believe in. They're committed to this. They're good businesses. We have, we've gone through a 100 years of change, both in the borough and in the neighborhood, but people have sustained that and figured out how to sustain their businesses, and we've built and created new clientele. And so it's an unusual environment. And part of it is supported by the larger context, which includes the Bronx Zoo and the Botanical Gardens, Fordham University, St. Barnabas Hospital. So we have, people who work in the neighborhood, people who live in the neighborhood, people who visit the neighborhood. It's quite unique in that way.
So, but it sounds like it's almost an enclave of people who've grown up and have known each other over the generations. What about a visitor coming in from England or California or Massachusetts? How would they feel coming into a neighborhood such as this?
I think they'll feel quite comfortable. It's not complicated. It's not dramatic. It's not even I don't even think they would know it, would look at it as a tourist place. And we do have, we have buses that come from all over the world, from Japan, from Europe, from other parts of the world. And they come in and they walk and they, you know, visit and they look and they talk and, you know, but we also have this other mix of a regular clientele of people who have been coming here for years. So they, it all sort of fits together. And then we have this whole other clientele of people who work in the neighborhood and shop there and people who come to the cultural institutions in our neighborhood and are there. So this is, it's a multifaceted clientele that we have, and it all sort of works together in some seamless way. It's not engineered, it's not created, it's not fabricated. And that, to me, is consistent with what we who own businesses here care about, which is our authenticity. I care about the authenticity of my business, that my grandfather started this, that I'm doing many of the same things he's doing. I do some different things. That's part of the evolution. But I also do the same things he did. So it's this, it's really hard to, I don't want to put a name on it because I don't think it deserves a name. I think it just sort of exists in its own sort of ecosystem and life.
Okay. I think visitors coming to the area are liable to run into some celebrities. I understand that Joe Pesci actually worked as a maitre d' in a restaurant in the Bronx, Little Italy.
And Amici's years ago. And the Belmonts came out of there. Chaz Palminteri, who's he's quite a character, but he still comes to the bakery, comes to the shops there. You never know he's there. He waits online if I'm not around and I don't see him, and he's it's cool. Like the people who have come through there, it's really nice and simple in that way, and that's actually part of its charm.
Yeah, I understand that Pesci's career actually started when Robert De Niro was in the Little Italy and spotted him and brought him into the acting profession.
I see also
that you've had others, small names, names people would never recognize, like Clint Eastwood, Farrah Fawcett, Liza Minnelli, Cher, Neil Patrick Harris, and others like that.
Yeah, I think people come up there because it just is it's comfortable. Nobody's going to make a big deal out of it. We're comfortable with celebrities, but we're also comfortable if you're not a celebrity. So it all sort of fits well together. And what they come for is authenticity. I think the more, like, people just want something real at this point. And we're as real as it gets.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. We're talking about other places there. We'll get into more of what's in Little Italy. But you mentioned that your family has had a bakery for three generations. Tell us something about your operation.
What we've done is evolve over the years. So my grandfather came over here from Sicily, and he and my grandmother worked the business, and they made what people who lived and worked in that neighborhood wanted, which was a very simple, basic Italian bread product, the Sicilian bread, seeded bread, semolina bread, like very basic products. My father and his brother took over the business in the 60s. They evolved a little bit in terms of like bringing some biscotti in and different products in. My brother took over the business in the 80s. He actually started to expand the biscotti and cookie line. He died prematurely, and so when I went to the business, I took a partner in, and we've evolved to now this whole line of very specialty breads. We make bread with olives, bread with jalapenos, we make bread with fennel and raisin. So we've evolved our product line as our clientele has evolved. You know, when I was growing up as a kid, the people who shopped in the bakery lived there. They came out every day. They bought their bread, they bought their meat, they bought their fish, they bought their vegetables, they were home cooked, came out again the next day and did the same thing. It's a different world now. People shop differently, people live differently, people work differently. There are two earners in every family now. So how we've evolved has been about how we've recognized our clientele. So and when I was a kid, our clientele was 100% Italian. That was an Italian ghetto. And everybody there spoke Italian. It's a different neighborhood now, but we've also become a destination for people who want good food, good quality product at a good price. And it's authentic. I think it's that combination of things is what we offer now.
Okay. Let me ask you this. If Morris Cohn or Jerry O'Leary were to come into the bakery, what's the signature offering they should be looking for?
You know, it's funny. Again, like I said, we have all the products my grandfather made. But the thing that's become a signature product for us, about 15 years ago, we started to dabble in this, like, let's put olives in bread. And we made this olive bread. And my God, it has become a signature product. It's honestly, we could never have believed it would take off the way it did. But I've been on the subway and I saw people with an olive bread in their bag. If I had to pick a signature product for us now, it's a specialty bread, and it's our olive bread. And like I never could have predicted that 25 years ago.
Okay. Are there many eateries, restaurants in the Bronx, Little Italy, and what kind of a choice of variety do you have?
There are at least a dozen restaurants, and they, you know, run the gamut from, you know, you sit down at a picnic table in Dominic's and have the most spectacular meal you're going to have. I mean, the quality and the quantity is stunning. And then, you know, you have white tablecloth restaurants. You have Roberto, who's a mad scientist of a chef. So I think there's a huge, terrific variety to choose from. And they're all in walking distance, which is the beautiful thing. The thing I love about Arthur Avenue and our neighborhood is it's al fresco, right? It's not a mall. It's an al fresco neighborhood. You walk the streets. It's like being in a piazza in Europe, because you can walk the streets and there's Casa di Mozzarella where Orazio makes, oh my God, like my daughter won't eat anybody else's mozzarella. You buy it, it's still warm, I can't describe it. It's indescribable that way. But there's all these places like that in the neighborhood. And it's all al fresco. And it's like, it's unique. It's unique and it's authentic. And that, to me, is what we got to offer.
Okay. Peter, we're going to have to take a break for a moment to pay some bills and listen to a couple of commercials. And we'll be back in about 90 seconds.
Yep.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
These days, my dollar just doesn't go as far. In my car, it gets me about 6 miles. On my cell phone, maybe 4 minutes. But at McDonald's, My Dollar gets me through the entire day. From sausage McMuffin with egg for breakfast to a tasty double cheeseburger. Thanks to McDonald's Dollar Menu, My Dollar gets me right where I want to be. Satisfied.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Travel Talk Radio. Our guest this evening is Peter Madonia, representing the Bronx's Little Italy, the other Little Italy in New York. And it's pretty much an undiscovered destination, and people are really missing out by not going there. Peter, parking in Manhattan is more often than not, it's a nightmare no matter where you are. How is it in the Bronx Little Italy area?
Look, we've done a lot to try and increase the availability of parking. In fairness to them, DOT has added a 50 or 60 metered spaces, which is really what we need. Helps people come, park, pay their money, and turn over the spaces. There's never enough parking, as far as I'm concerned. We have a municipal parking lot right on the in the middle of Arthur Avenue. Like, we could never have enough parking because we are in a transportation desert. I can't get there by subway. But I think that's okay. People have figured it out. Our clientele has figured it out. Could we use more parking? Absolutely. I'm begging DOT and the city of New York to help us develop that. It's something I spend a lot of time thinking about and how to create. And that's a long-term sort of plan for us, is how to build more parking availability, because our clientele, and we know this, we spent time and energy as a neighborhood figuring out who our clientele is. They come from 10 to 40 miles away. They have an average income of $140,000 to $150,000 a year. So we have a real, we have a clientele that is foodies. They want to spend money. They are interested in what we have. We have to figure out how to get them there, keep them there, park them there, and send them home. That's what we are now. Very different from when I grew up.
Okay. Now, the James Beard Foundation, named for the very, very famous late food writer James Beard, I understand that the 2019 Broadcast Media Award for Online Video on Location was presented to First We Feast for the video which featured Casa della Mozzarella. Can you tell us something about that?
He's talking about one of the nicest, most, like, he's a dear, I was there yesterday, quite frankly, just to say hello. One of the nicest, most thoughtful individuals personally, but, like, this guy has devoted his life to every day by hand making his product and making sure it's perfect. I'm telling my daughter, if I bring mozzarella from somewhere else, she will know. She's been eating his mozzarella since she's a baby. She's 31 now, and she knows if it's both if it's somewhere else and if it's his, if it's not from that morning, she can tell. His product is stunning, stunning. And it's all about his pride. You know, he came over from the other side of the world, worked here, didn't speak English, learned the language, worked for somebody, bought the business, and he has developed an incredible clientele. He makes mozzarella for the New York Yankees. He's just a wonderful guy. I mean, you have to meet him to really appreciate what I'm saying, but. I could not say enough about him, and his story is the American story.
You had me with the New York Yankees. there are other restaurants besides Italian. I understand there's an Albanian restaurant in the area, and there is no way that I'm going to get the pronunciation right. Ka-quelu? Does that sound?
It's Cacacalu.
Cacacalu
is how you say it. Cacacalu.
Okay.
That's how you say it.
I'm not even going to try that again.
I'm not. It's okay. I don't know what it means, but I know that's the name. I serve them bread, so I know that. I have to say, I've eaten there. The food is terrific. I had what they call mishapazu, which is beaten beans. but it was terrific. And
how far is the Italian dish from the Italian food?
You know, like, so the Albanian Americans who came here, many of them are diaspora who came through Italy. They that's how they got here. So I think it's not, I know, it's not an accident they settled in a neighborhood like Little Italy, because many of them spoke Italian. They came through Italy. There's an affinity there. Culturally, they are, you know, very similar in terms of, like, very close-knit families. So, like, this has been going on for, I would say, since the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, this relationship with Albanian Americans and Italians. And they are and have been an important part of our clientele. They are, they have done very well in America. They worked hard. They did all the right things in terms of, as an immigrant group, for, in terms of, like, you know, building their lives here. And the fact that they opened a restaurant in that neighborhood doesn't shock me at all. And it's a beautiful restaurant. The woodwork is stunning. Whoever did the woodwork in that place is some real craftsman. And that's the stuff that, like, they care about that, right? They care about authenticity and quality. And that's what I think that is happening in that restaurant.
Now, if somebody from out of the area, even somebody in the area, wants to learn more about the Bronx Little Italy, is there a website or something they can access?
So we have a business improvement district, BronxLittleItaly.com, which is the sort of representative and the entity that really thinks about and worries about how do we sustain this? Because we all care about how to sustain this. So it's BronxLittleItaly.com, and you can contact it, us and it, and ask whatever you need to ask. We constantly put out stuff. We have probably close to 300,000 followers now through that website. We have social media there. So there are people across this country who care about this and are still in contact with us regularly. So there is a diaspora out there that either came through here or knows it or touched it or somebody touched it, that is constantly wants to know what we're doing and what we're, you know, we're about. I encourage people to go there. And, you know, we have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have all these social media sites attached to that. And we're very active there. And we have a regular presence there.
That site is not the Bronx Little Italy. It's just BronxLittleItaly.com?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. For somebody who's been in the food business for so many years, I understand that you were chief of staff to former Mayor Mike Bloomberg. How did that come about?
Look, when I was a kid, you know, we all had a turn in the box at the bakery, but, you know, I was like, I'm going to go see what the rest of the world has to offer. I did my thing, and God bless my parents. They, you know, sent me to school and sent me to college, and I had a, you know, another vision for myself. And I went out and, you know, sort of chased it. And I wound up working in government, the city government. I worked for Ed Koch and City Hall for 5 years as a really young man. And then I was back at the bakery. Somebody said to me, why don't you go help this guy run for mayor, Mike Bloomberg? He was running a quixotic campaign. I went and worked for him, and he won. And I went back into government for 4 years. So I've had, you know, I've had an unusual career, let me just say.
I understand you were also the COO of.
Yes,
I'm sorry. I understand you were also COO of the Rockefeller Foundation.
Yeah. So
what is that about?
I left City Hall. I got recruited by a search firm. I became the chief operating officer of the Rockefeller Foundation, which is a you know, the noteworthy family and foundation and global. I got to travel and work around the world with them. Ran a $200 million company for them. But at the end of the day, when it was time to think about, like, my legacy, and I learned this from the Rockefeller family because I celebrated their 100th anniversary as a foundation with them in 2013. And 2018, I said I'm going to go back to the bakery because we turned 100. And that's what I did. So that was, for me, sort of everything coming full circle. And I had a great career and a great life, but it was time to come back.
So it was the centennial celebration of the bakery that brought you back in.
Yes, completely. I had a great career at Rockefeller, and I could have stayed there. But I knew that in 2018, when we turned 100 as a family business, that I needed to be there. I needed to oversee that. I needed to celebrate it, and we did. We had a great year for 2018.
Okay.
Lots of media, lots of coverage, lots of people really like the story. And I think it's a great story.
All right. Now, somebody coming into the Bronx, Little Italy, how long should they budget time-wise to stay there? And what should they make as the highlights of their visit?
So this is the great thing about the neighborhood, right? And if you grew up in this neighborhood, you never refer to it as anything other than the neighborhood. You come into the neighborhood, yeah. So it's worth knowing, by the way, just for fun. But I think you need to spend 3 or 4 hours there. Because here's what, and I also think, I've had this theory, I've never tested it, and it's just sort of fun. But I think we have a disproportionate number of male shoppers there. And I've always, like, sort of looked at that and said, why are there all these guys here? And part of it is I think they go come shopping, and then they go say, hey, let's go eat lunch. Let's go have a couple of glasses of wine, have some, something to eat. So I think the whole stick in this neighborhood is it's a great place to go eat, buy food, buy what you need for your house, whether it's meat, fish, baked goods, salamaria, cold cuts, all the things that you want in your refrigerator. And then while you're there, let's go eat lunch. So I think you need 3 hours. And by the way, if you're going to the Yankee game, if you're going to the zoo, if you're going to the dark, let's just go over there and, get something to eat, or while we're there, let's grab some stuff that we want to take home. So it's some combination of those things that I think make it different and interesting.
Okay. You also kept up your community involvement. Are you still involved in the Business Improvement District?
Yes, I am. I mean, when I was at City Hall, I actually helped create it because I thought we were ready for a business district where we actually took care of ourselves. And yes, I chair the board now, which I have done for the last couple of years and will continue to do for a period, not forever, but for now. I think it's important to our sustainability as a neighborhood to own our own narrative and worry the things that we need to worry. Look, there's this whole movement going on in the city that everything should be about bicycles and how people move around. Cars seem to be the enemy in some way, shape, or form. But we are in the transportation desert. We need vehicular traffic. And so I am, obsessed with making sure that the city understands in order for us to survive, people have to be able to drive to us. There's no public transportation.
All right. Peter, we've got about 30 seconds left. Let me just say once more that a website of bronxlittleitaly.com will bring you the information. Our guest this evening has been Peter Madonia of Madonia's Bakery in the Bronx, Little Italy. Peter, thank you very much. It's been a great conversation, and I hope a lot of people come to see Little Italy in the Bronx.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time and your attention to this, and I'm really grateful. Most grateful.
Have a great day and a good 4th of July.
Thank you. You too.
Goodbye now.